through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Okay, we're going to talk to ESPN's Reese Davis here in just a second. He's going to be a good guest to talk to about a bunch of the stuff going on with the potential cancellation of college football this year. You know, I hear a lot of people saying, oh, well, you know, it's all about money. And that's the main motivating factor for trying to keep the season alive. You know, nobody cares about the athletes' health. It's just the money. I don't think that that's true. I think that people are genuinely concerned about the health of the athletes, as well as the money. And it's not all just, you know, money that's going straight into Rupert Murdoch's pocket. It's people like Reese Davis and all the people that work with him on a show like College Game Day or the equivalent over at FS1 or whatever. People are going to lose their jobs if there's no college football season, in the same way that they would if there were no NFL season or baseball season or whatever. We already saw that the Mariners laid off a bunch of people, and we've got a baseball season, right? So when you hear people say, oh, well, it's just about money, don't let anybody fool you. Well, that money pays for people's salaries. That money pays for jobs. Okay, so it's more complicated than just, you know, the billionaire networks or the owner, the people who run the networks getting their money. It's much more meaningful than that, and it's going to hit home for a lot of people. People like, you know, photogs, cameramen and women, producers, coordinating producers, people who drive the shuttle to and from the airport from the campus itself. There's a lot of people on the athletic staff, for example. I mean, there's a lot of people who are going to be seriously affected if there's no college football season. So it's not just about the players and the money and the health. There's a lot of complicated stuff going on, and I definitely want to get to that with Reese Davis. We're going to talk to him in just a second. Do either one of you, by the way, before we move on, want to say anything about that?
No, I do think that – I don't think the – for college football, for presidents, obviously they're thinking of all of that stuff. But I don't necessarily think that it has to do with them catering to the ESPNs or the Foxes or, you know, Fox Sports and guys and companies like that. I do believe that there's some real financial issues on university campuses and that they are working through that. They're working through liability. They're trying to figure out if it's worth it. And just the latest shakeup for players now, you know, demanding and asking for more, I think also is something that makes these universities sit here and wonder if it's worth it, if it's worth it to go through all of this. So for me, I don't necessarily believe these universities and university presidents and chancellors deserve a pat on the back for them, you know, thinking solely about the player's health. I think there's a lot of other factors in this, and the reason why it has changed so drastically. There hasn't been something statistically that has changed drastically that we've learned about COVID from the past week to all of a sudden bring on this, you know, sudden change in mentality.
Yeah, I do think it's an important note, Tom. I think that that there's a lot of people involved with everything. It's like my mom works in the airline industry. She's not like a flight attendant or a pilot or someone working at like a ticket counter, but there are like hundreds of thousands of people connected to that industry, which has been heavily impacted by COVID. Likewise, my best friend works in transportation, right, for professional sports teams. Like, she'll be impacted by this stuff. And I think that many of our listeners are in industries that have been heavily impacted by this and have either been laid off or seen a drastic reduction in hours or clients. They can empathize with the idea of people being tied to an industry, wondering what's going to happen next. And whether that's college football reporters, whether it's someone, you know, working a concession stand, whether it's a trainer, whatever it is, it's not a decision that I think the NCAA is making lightly. That being said, I think that the conversation that I'm curious to have with Reese when he joins us is whether or not they spent enough time on that decision.
Agreed, because it seems like they're just kind of coming to it now. Okay, Curtis, you can go ahead and give him a call. He just texted me. One more thing here I want to get to is this tweet that came out from you. We are united and we want to play. One of the stipulations here that they're after is they say they want to guarantee eligibility whether a player chooses to play the season or not. You know, college football, as far as his athletics are concerned, are a revolving door just by nature. You have freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, then you're out. And sometimes you have fifth-year seniors, just depending. But that's going to cause a serious logjam if everybody can opt out or not play, or we don't have a season, and then you got an incoming freshman class. Then what do? I mean, that's a car wreck and a half.
Yeah, Jake, what would that look like? I know you don't have the, I know you don't.
Well, hold on. Let's get to Reese Davis here.
Okay.
And we'll address that question just in a second here. Okay. Reese Davis of ESPN, host of ESPN's College Game Day. Terrific guest. You know, Reese, first of all, thanks for joining us. A second ago, I was talking about how, you know, if there's a canceled college football season, it's not just about the money that the TV networks lose or the health of the players. We're talking about jobs that could be lost. I mean, people who do what you do, for example, you host College Game Day. I think about all the people who are on your crew and other hosts and people who, you know, who run the studio shows at ESPN or FS1. I mean, what kind of concern is there right now for that group of people?
Well, I mean, I think there's been a concern for everybody in terms of employment since the pandemic began, and the struggles and the challenges that has presented. But in terms of the college football impact on that, it extends well beyond us and our shows. The economic impact on college towns is immense, particularly those where college football is an integral part of the fabric. Now, a city like the one that you're in might not notice it as much, but you can rest assured that Norman, Oklahoma, or Tuscaloosa, Alabama, or Clemson, South Carolina will feel it. And there are jobs there and businesses there that will be at stake. That said, that's not to say that that's a reason to play the season. It's, you know, if it is not wise, if it's not prudent, if it can't be done safely, then obviously that's just a position you have to take. But in regard to your question, there is fallout that extends well beyond those of us who cover college football for a living. We'll all be fine. We'll find programming. We'll do things. And certainly our crew, you know, I've checked on many members of our crew over the course of this pandemic to see how they're doing and what they've been able to do, you know, during all of the restrictions across the country. But, you know, it's far more widespread than just those of us who cover college football, the impact that it would have on jobs.
Reese, do you think that there's an error that's been made or some kind of omission in action along the way that's led us to this point? Or do you think that where we are right now is inevitable?
I think it depends on what you mean by where we are. I'll answer it this way. No one can control the virus. We can mitigate it, but we can't control it. We don't have a definitive treatment. We certainly don't have a definitive vaccine right now. So there are certain things that are inevitable in terms of dealing with it. We also have no guarantee that that will ever happen. We may have to learn how to function as a society for a much longer period of time while dealing with the threat of this virus. That said, I do think that it would have helped the conferences had the NCAA a little earlier given some guidelines. But it's also very important. I think this is really misunderstood. The NCAA doesn't, it's not under their purview to tell, you know, the Southeastern Conference or the Pac-12 or anybody else, you can't play. You know, but they can, you know, they can say that if you choose to proceed, these are best operating practices. These are the requirements in terms of being in compliance with us that we'll need from you to play. All of those types of things, I think, would have been helpful to the conferences. And so I think it is fair criticism to say that the NCAA should have given earlier and more definitive leadership in this regard. but I would stop short of saying that if only they had done that, we would not be on the cusp of the Big Ten and perhaps the Pac-12 deciding not to have a fall season.
So, Reese, was this just very simply put, was this a fundamental breakdown of the NCAA as an institution to not come out and give those guidelines right away to help uniform all of the Power Five conferences and other conferences that were trying to, in your words, mitigate this spread of COVID on campuses?
Well, look, here's the thing. I would say that it was a significant misstep in leadership. Now, that said, I am intimately familiar to the point that I have a son who is an athlete, not in football, but at a Power Five program, and I cannot fathom, and ask him the same, cannot fathom one other thing that that his school could possibly be doing in order to try to protect the players. So even with the guidance of the commissioners individually in response to their local health guidelines and how the pandemic has affected different areas of the country at different times, the schools with which I'm intimately familiar have done exhaustive things to try to mitigate the spread. So I'm not sure that direction from the NCAA perhaps could have helped people get a head start and perhaps promoted some uniformity. But it's also true that because of the different impact that that the virus has had at different times in different regions, that may not have been feasible. That may not have been something we could say, here are uniform guidelines, you must do it exactly this way. That might not have been best practice in a particular area of the country. So I'm not willing to, I guess the short way to say that is this. The NCAA has significant failings. Everybody loves to jump on them and pile on them, and they have made some missteps. They have shown lack of leadership in many cases, and I think that they were slow in showing leadership here. But I'm not sure that even had they sent out best practices, that in the many cases that I'm familiar with and the programs that I'm familiar with, I'm not sure what more they could have required. In fact, most of these protocols and programs that I know far exceed anything that you could draw up, I think.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense. And Reese, honestly, I've loved listening to you for many, many years. Growing up, wanting to be a college football player, becoming a college football player, you're just a fabric of College Game Day. And, you know, being excited about that and moving forward. And now all of a sudden, you know, schedules have been turned out. And then there's been this change and this shift in a very mm-hmm. stark direction over the past week. Why do you think that it has just completely turned on its head in such a short period of time?
That's the question I asked last night, and I have not gotten a satisfactory answer out of it, because nothing, to my knowledge, has changed about the data or the virus or anything to the extent that you would be releasing schedules and then 2-3 days later talking about canceling the whole thing. Now, I know different conferences are behaving differently in that regard. But I asked several people, and no one knew definitively, or at least willing to say, but the best consensus I could come up with from quite a number of conversations over the last 2 days is that because the Big Ten particularly is a little bit ahead in terms of their schedule and trying to start a little bit earlier, and they're about to go into pads, and in some cases students are returning to campus, that and then also the cardiac news that perhaps an Indiana player has had some cardiac issues as a result of his battle with COVID-19, that perhaps it has made the presidents a little bit nervous about it in short order. And not knowing exactly how things were going to go once students return to campus, is that going to cause a spike? Are we going to have to shut down? And not having the longer runway that the SEC, for one, and really, even though I know the Pac-12 had some other extenuating circumstances because of local restrictions, but they're trying to start in late September too. And I think that provided a little bit longer runway, but it reached a critical point sooner for the Big Ten. And I think some of those things might have caused a little nervousness on the part of the Big Ten presidents.
A bit of a related question here, Reese. we have seen the reports that the Big Ten obviously has canceled its season. We're hearing the Pac-12 is going to do the same, but I just want to gauge kind of your understanding of how the other four conferences, Power Five conferences, are moving forward, maybe for each one.
Well, I don't think the Big Ten has made it official yet, is my understanding. Now, most people seem to think it's inevitable, barring some type of change of heart. And you've seen Ryan Day and Jim Harbaugh and Scott Frost. Not that coaches have that much influence, but they can lobby, and their relationships with their individual presidents might carry some weight. But I don't think they've made it official yet, though it seems to certainly be trending in that direction. And I think most believe the Pac-12 will follow suit with the Big Ten, though that remains to be seen. The other conferences, I think it's probably fair to say that the Big 12 still wait and see, and I think the ACC and the SEC particularly are still willing to give it some time. Now, they may wind up at the same place. They might wind up at the same place because of the optics of, two or three conferences citing medical concerns, and then meaning the two that just one or two that decide to play, forging ahead. That might be an untenable situation for them. It's certainly an unattractive one for them. But I don't think necessarily, particularly in the case of the SEC, that they will be absolutely beholden. If the Big Ten presidents announce in, 20 minutes or 2 days that they are going to not play this fall, I don't think the SEC and probably not the ACC will automatically throw their hands up and say, well, okay, we gave it a try. I think that they will hold out a little longer and see if it's feasible to do it as safely as possible. And I would like to emphasize that no one's perfect in this. It's worthy debate to say whether a conference, a school, an administration should be pursuing playing football in the midst of a pandemic. That is worthy debate and reasonable places to differ. But in terms of this idea that some seem to have, that administrators and coaches are acting with callous disregard toward their players. The ones that I'm familiar with, that is not the case at all. And I don't believe that that's the case. Are they motivated by wanting to reap the financial benefits? Well, of course they are. Are they motivated by wanting to maintain the importance of football and the culture of certain areas? Of course they are. But I think they are still guided first by trying to do what's right by their players.
Last one from me, Reese. Have you had conversations with colleagues about what the NFL draft could hypothetically look like if football's moved to spring?
I mean, just on a cursory level. I think you'd see a lot more players opting out and not being willing to put themselves in harm's way. The easiest example of that would be look at Tua Tagovailoa, a very, very serious injury. But because of the amount of time between his injury and the draft, he was able to recover enough to still be a top five pick. And then between the injury and the following season, I read the other day he's been cleared medically for whenever, the Dolphins are on the field. Condensing that time frame would make it a bigger risk for those who know what their draft status is. So I think it'd lead to probably quite a few players opting not to play in the spring. My biggest concern about that, though, goes beyond that, and it's condensing two seasons into too short amount of time when for years prior to the pandemic, our number one objective has been to make football safer, to limit the contact, to stipulate the number of days in which contact can happen in practice in an effort to reduce the risk for concussion. Now we're going to have game-like collisions for a season, no matter how long it is in the spring, and then turn around and do it again in the fall. That would probably be, unless a medical professional can show me that the players not only due to concussions, but have had enough time to recover, but also to train, recover, and mitigate injury risk for other areas by their training. And I know you can't be foolproof with injuries, but unless someone could convince me that this is wise and safe, I think that's irresponsible on the surface. And I've talked to some medical people who say, unless they give enough time in between, that I'm not off base in my thinking that playing two seasons within that short a period of time is not good for the players. Mm.
Terrific stuff from Reese Davis, host of ESPN's College Game Day. Reese, I hope that if we talk to you again in the next couple of months, we're talking about an actual college football season. But I guess we'll just wait and see.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Thank you guys for having me on.
Thanks, Reese.
Thank you, Reese.
You bet.
All right, we don't have time for four downs here. We're going to move that to 2:15 today. Do you feel any more encouraged? He's right, though. You know, we keep people like us. You know what? I won't include you guys. I'll just say people like me tend to point the finger sometimes when we don't really know what's going on behind the scenes. Like what he was saying there about the school that his kid goes to. He's right. I'm sure that the university is doing everything they can individually to make this situation right. They're not just sitting around. But when the heads of each conference wait till August to get together to see what they're going to do, I guess that's just kind of what bugs me a little bit. Anybody want to have the last word on that?
I'm going to defer to a question, Jake, unless you had one.
No.
Okay. I think it's a good question from a texter, and I know that we all sounded off on this. The 253, would they really play in spring, take a couple months off, then play in the fall? And that timeline's actually even shorter because, as you guys know, rookie minicamp's in May. So you'd be playing in the spring, drafted in late April or early May, depending on which round you're taking, and then you'd jump right into rookie camp. So Reese seemed to be concerned about the safety for players. Jake, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't see it. I understand why some would try to do it, but overall, if you're trying to start the season on time, like normal in the fall, in your normal time frame of the following season, to me, I don't think doing college football in the spring is the right thing to do. I think it's the right thing to do to just give it a go the following year and go through spring practice and make sure that these players are healthy, that they're going through all of this right. It is better for the player to be healthy, to show up and have their pro day and to be given an opportunity to you know, be an undrafted free agent healthy at their peak condition rather than going through a college football season, getting injured and missing out on that opportunity.
Halftime show is next. The Mariners won. Justice Sheffield pitched really well. We'll talk about that. 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Let's start with something else. Let's start with the Mariners.
Okay.
They managed to squeeze out a win yesterday. The bullpen actually held on and preserved what was a terrific start for Justice Sheffield. He got his first major league win. And he, you know what, guys? Like, sometimes it's the eyeball test. And I don't know how much of yesterday's game you actually saw or how much everybody watched over the weekend. But Justice Sheffield looked like a major league pitcher yesterday. I mean, he had command, he had poise, he just looked every bit the kid who is supposed to be, you know, one of the Mariners' next big stars. So that has to be encouraging, certainly for everybody who watched. The bullpen, yeah, a little shaky late, but they got the job done. They had a good outing in the seventh from Swanson. Sheffield goes 6 innings, allows 4 hits, strikes out 7. So maybe not the best weekend overall for the Mariners against the red-hot Colorado Rockies, but they got the win yesterday, and Sheffield was definitely a good takeaway from that, Jake.
Oh, man, it was so fun watching Sheffield. That slider is unbelievable. That is an A-plus pitch for him, and it's going to be fun to see him develop everything else. Obviously, his changeup is the third pitch that he's working on, but you know, his fastball and how he's putting it together is really fun. And that Colorado Rockies lineup is a good lineup. So to see him have that performance was really encouraging, and is one that you are rooting for Justice Sheffield. If there are any pitchers that you are rooting for, obviously all of them. But Justice Sheffield, let's keep seeing this young man develop and grow into a really nice starting pitcher, because this would help this rotation. It would help the Mariners as they're building towards the future not have to make as big of an investment into their starting rotation if you continue to have Marco Gonzalez and Justice Sheffield and Kikuchi, and hopefully Justin Dunn can continue to do that as well. So very encouraging stuff here.
Yeah, I'd love to see a good night from Justin Dunn, but Justice Sheffield, fantastic stuff. He had a fairly decent outing last time. There was just that really, really bad fifth inning, yeah. In which I think two runs were also attributed to him, even though by then he'd been replaced, but obviously those guys were on base. So, kind of a bummer ending to that last outing, but it was great to see him bounce back.
And the Mariners will be taking on the Texas Rangers at 6 o'clock tonight. Next. All right, we keep hearing reports that the Power 5 conferences are going to be postponing the season, at least till the spring, or maybe cancel the whole thing altogether. We'll see. Guys, there's a lot of tentacles to this story. What do you think is the number one thing that's holding this up? We've got things like health. We've got things like, well, these are student athletes and their students and other students aren't allowed on university campuses. What do you think is the biggest thing? Stacey, I'll start with you.
I think the logistics of it would be one. I don't know if that's the biggest, but I think the idea of coordinating it to where they're able to follow all the health protocols is difficult. I wonder, too, if part of it is the NCAA backing itself into a corner with its amateurism kind of rules. And whether or not you agree with them, whether or not you agree athletes should be paid, whatever it is, at the end of the day, the NCAA has said these athletes are students and not professionals, and they have to be treated as such. And so now they have no choice but to treat them the way that you would student athletes and not necessarily employees.
It is really difficult. I mean, it is so difficult, all wrapped up in one. I believe it all is there. But the thing is that is interesting to me, as I pointed out earlier and as Reese Davis pointed out, is over the past week, there's been a sharp change in the direction of college football, yet there really hasn't been a change that, at least that I know of, that has happened amongst all universities in terms of COVID outbreaks or the data behind COVID. I mean, universities were set, ready to go. They were releasing schedules. They were moving forward. I can't just imagine that all of a sudden that as they were starting to put on pads, universities are sitting there and saying, wait, hold on, wait a second. I don't think that that is the case. I think that there's a lot at play here, liability, money, players demanding and wanting more, and what that's going to end up costing the university if they meet those demands. I think all of that is wrapped into one, to where universities are sitting here saying that they don't think it's worth it. They don't think it's worth all of this, especially when you can't generate the same revenue that you were before by having fans in the stands.
If there's an opt-out option for the players, let's say just in the Pac-12, then how could the university be held responsible if a kid gets COVID? Like, no, if that's the case, if we're not going to make the players report, or we're not going to make the players participate, forget about eligibility and all that stuff, then wouldn't that give the university an out as far as being held responsible for a kid getting sick? What do you think, Stacey?
Potentially, yeah. But, I mean, you've also got to consider that it is just harder, again, logistically, to control what thousands and thousands of kids are doing. You've got a little over 2,000 NFL players and one central leader and with the commissioner and the NFL offices that are, you know, they made every NFL team send in their health protocols for the season and then had to approve it. They've got the way they're doing things. Multiply that by a thousand for the NCAA, and you've got the kind of problem they're dealing with.
I can't do math.
Okay. That was more kids than they actually have. But that's okay. I can't do math either. It's a good question, though.
Seahawks training camp is here. It's time for Two-A-Days on 710 ESPN Seattle. Starting August 17th, join us each weekday for exclusive access to training camp with a daily roundtable from 11 a.m. to noon featuring John Clayton and our Seahawks experts. And then your chance to interact with 710 hosts on a live video chat each afternoon on Instagram Live. 710 ESPN Seattle is your all-access pass to Seahawks training camp with Two-A-Days starting August 17th. All right, coming up next, we are going to jump into the timeline. A couple interesting stories for you there, including the one that Mike Sauk wanted us desperately to talk about, golf, and some interesting happenings within. 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Timeline
with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It's The Timeline on Tom, Jake, and Stacy. We're reading you the top trending stories you're going to see on your own Twitter timelines. If you haven't heard them, well, guess what? We've got a lot in store. And if you have, we're going to give you the latest information on those stories. Again, if you want us to see, read any stories for this segment, go ahead and tag us at Stacey Rost, at JT Heaps 9, at Tom Wassel. Again, that's on Twitter. Let's get started. There's a mutiny in the Big Ten. Now, the Big Ten hasn't officially canceled its season, but there are many reports that the Big Ten, and for that matter, the Pac-12, plan to announce that this week. Again, these are just reports, but seem to be something that is inevitably going to happen. Jim Harbaugh. God, I always struggle with that name. I don't know about you guys. No matter how many years it's been. Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh. Had a statement that he released on the earlier this morning, essentially saying that he wants to be able to play a season. An hour ago, Nebraska head coach Scott Frost had a press conference where he also said the university's committed to playing.
We want to play a Big Ten schedule. I hope that's what happens. Our university is committed to playing no matter what, no matter what that looks like and how that looks. We want to play no matter who it is or where it is. So we'll see how all those chips fall. We certainly hope it's in the Big Ten. If it isn't, I think we're prepared to look for other options.
Ooh.
That doesn't scare you, Tom?
Well, if I'm the Big Ten, it kind of does.
It makes me real nervous because he seems willing to go to another conference.
And does that mean the end of conferences in college football? I don't know. I mean, can a coach or a university, Jake, unilaterally just say, you know what? You said we can't play, but we say we are playing. We're going to go join up with Alabama and get our rear ends kicked all year.
Well, if the president is behind it, right? If the university is behind it, then yeah, they can do whatever they want. They could go, you know, to the SEC or the ACC, whatever the case may be, and go ahead and play. And so you're going to see this conference realignment situation happen. I think that there are so many underlying things that are about to change when it comes to, you know, college football, the dynamics, the conference alignments, all of it. And this might be that step where, you know, Nebraska, Michigan, any other Pac-12 university, if there is any that want to continue to play and they shut down the season in that conference, you're leaving them no choice. So it'll be really interesting to see how this all comes together.
My next story takes me to what I think has been the most important question on our program today. What is a brawl? Scientifically, what is a brawl? So let me get to this first. the Astros and A's got into what I will call a brawl, but some people, Jake, disagree with me. We'll hear him in a second. But first, quick background. So it was Laureano, correct, Curtis? He had been hit by a pitch three times in that game.
Three times in the weekend,
so he gets hit again.
Twice in that game.
He gets hit again. He's had enough of it. He's talking trash. Then one of the Astros coaches is near the dugout, starts running his mouth too, and he's like, let's go, let's do this. I mean, who knows if that's what he said, but certainly encouraging a brawl. Laureano runs toward him. Other guys get involved, and before you know it, guys are all over each other fighting. So, Curtis, go ahead and get to our cut number six right here.
He's hit twice today. You can't blame him as Laureano is plunked for the fifth time this year, even though it wasn't much. Just frustrated with the frustrations of Houston.
Yeah, I'm not target practice here.
Yeah.
Come on.
It just was a bad look. And now Laureano's racing toward the Astros dugout. He's going after somebody, and he's tackled by several Astros. And now we have a real Donnybrook, something that was completely frowned upon in 2020. And both teams are pushing and shoving each other in front of the Astros dugout. And it has not stopped yet.
Donnybrook.
That's a brawl. That's a brawl.
It is not a brawl.
Yes,
this is not a brawl. This is a bench clearing, shoving and yelling match. This is not a brawl. I did not see multiple.
I saw close.
You know,
a fist.
Punches thrown. I saw one that hit the catcher in his helmet.
Ouch.
You know, there's one, but outside of that, just a lot of hugging each other and yelling at each other in this brawl. But it was interesting that it got to this point, and it all got started by the hitting coach for the Astros, who then goes and hides behind all of the players. I mean, come on.
I'm going to tweet out a real brawl. This one's
good.
This one is from, it's in the 80s. It's my boy, Claudel Washington, rest in peace. He takes it right off the hip from Mario Soto. He then, like, walks very slowly out towards the mound, just sort of like, and then goes after Soto. And first, though, before he goes after him, he takes the the home plate umpire and just throws him. It's a great, great highlight. That's a good brawl. Remember in 2003, I know Curtis remembers, when Pedro Martinez took 72-year-old Don Zimmer by the head and threw him to the ground. That was a brawl. I was at the game where Jason Veritek got up in A-Rod's face, took him down. There was actually some bleeding in that brawl. That was a nasty one. So those are actual good baseball brawls. I do tend to agree. Yesterday was fun, but that doesn't really qualify as one of the all-time greats.
I've got two qualifications coming in from the text line, separate texters. 206 says, brawl requires punches. All right, just punches. If there are punches thrown, it's a brawl. 253, a brawl is at least three or more fights taking place at the same time. That's not bad. But what if it's a big fight between two guys?
Well, it's true. I mean, there's one between, I can't remember the pitcher at the time, but it was the Giants and Washington Nationals. It was Bryce Harper who got hit, and Harper came running out, and they went fists.
It was Mariners icon connecting. Hunter Strickland, yeah.
Was it Strickland? That's right. It was. Yeah, they went to huge blows before the bench is cleared.
Next story. I'm going to move on from this. We're not going to agree on this one. It was a brawl. I get the last word. Colin Morikawa, 23 years old, is the winner of the 2020 PGA Championship. It was just his second major appearance. He also becomes part of a pretty elite club. He is the fourth player ever to win a PGA championship at age 23. He joins Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, and Rory McIlroy.
Big deal.
So, I mean, 23. So I think I was living in my parents' basement. We were both, I think, succeeding at life at 23, me and Colin. You're winning a PGA championship. I'm working part-time in the mall. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, we both are living our truth.
I was working at the liquor store.
Yeah, congratulations to this young man. The other part of it, of this weekend and of this PGA Championship, was the absolute failure of Brooks Koepka. Talking trash, like he had this thing in the bag. Talking about how only Dustin Johnson was somebody that had won a major.
A lot of the guys in the leaderboard are, I don't think, have won. I guess DJ's only won one. But I don't know the other guys that are up there.
Man.
He then goes on to just absolutely tank tank, being on the leaderboard to falling out completely, that, my friends, is one where you should probably just keep your mouth shut. And if you don't, then you're holding yourself up to epic failure. So I love to see a little bit of humble pie given to Brooks Koepka this weekend as well.
Yeah, if you're talking trash, you've got to be Curtis, what's that guy's name on Eastbound and Down that he plays?
Kenny Powers.
Kenny Powers. You have to be Kenny Powers level talking trash where it doesn't matter if you're bad because it's just you're blowing me away with this trash talk right now. Or you have to be good and able to back it up. You can't just do like one snide comment and then not perform. That's disappointing all around.
How did that show get so popular? Like, I feel like I just missed that one.
Did you ever watch it?
No. Like, I never heard of it until well after it was off the air.
Outrageous. Outrageous.
I don't know if it would be as funny now because it's kind of like Napoleon Dynamite, I didn't see until after it had been out for like 3 years. By then, I'd heard every single joke from the movie. Every single joke. Because this is also when I was I in high school? I think I was in high school, maybe junior high. I don't know. Either way, people are making these jokes all the time. So none of it's funny anymore. That would probably be Eastbound and Down for you. Like, this type of humor probably isn't funny anymore.
I'll give Danny McBride credit, though. You guys ever seen The Righteous Gemstones? That's a great show.
No, I haven't seen that, but he is a funny individual.
Yeah, no, he's good. He's real good. He's good. All right, so how does college football affect the Seattle Seahawks going forward next year? Did John Schneider time this thing perfectly with Jamal Adams? 710 ESPN Seattle.